ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम विष्णुपदाय कृष्ण प्रश्नाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नित्य नमने नमस्ते सारस्वत देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारने निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतरने श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव वसुदि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा कृष्णा कृष्ण हरे हरे, हरे रामा राम राम हरे हरे। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 90, verse 23. Susya drada karasita bata sindhu patnya sampratya pasta kamala sriya ishtabhatu Yadvadvaya madupate pranayavalokam Aprapya mushtashadaya puru karshitasma. Susya, and drying up Prada, whose lakes Karshita shriveled up, Bata, alas, Sindhu of the ocean, Patnya, O wives, Samprati, now, Apasta, lost, Kamala, of lotuses, Shriya, whose opulence, Ishta, beloved, Bartu, of the husband, Yadvat, just as the Vayam, we, Madhupate, of Krishna, Pranaya, loving, Avalokam, glance, Aprapya, not obtaining, Mushta, cheated, Hridaya, whose hearts, Puru, thoroughly, Karshita, emaciated, Sma, we have become. Translation, O rivers, wives of the ocean, your pools have now dried up. Also, you have shriveled to nothing, and your wealth of lotuses has vanished. Are you, then, like us, who are withering away because of not receiving the affectionate glance of our dear husband, the Lord of Madhu, who has cheated our hearts. Purport: during the summer, the rivers do not receive downpours of water provided by their husband, the ocean, via the clouds. The real reason for the river's emaciation, as the queen see it, is that they have failed to obtain the loving glance of Lord Krishna, the reservoir of all happiness. Text 24. Welcome, swan. Please sit here and drink some milk. Give us some news of the descendant of Sura, dear one. We know you are his messenger. Is that invincible lord doing well, and does that unreliable friend of ours still remember the words he spoke to us long ago? Why should we go and worship him? O servant of a petty master, go tell him who fulfills our desires to come here without the goddess of fortune. Is she the only woman exclusively devoted to him? Purport: Srila Vishnu Chakravarti relates the following conversation between the queens and the swan. The queens ask, is the unconquerable lord doing well? The swan replies, how can Lord Krishna be doing well without you, his beloved consorts? But does he even remember what he once told one of us, Srimati Rukmini? Does he recall that he said, in all my palaces I see no other wife as dear as you? He does indeed remember this, and that is why he sent me here. You should all go to him and engage in his devotional service. Why should we go worship him if he refuses to come here to be with us? But my dear oceans of compassion, he is suffering so much from your absence. How can he be saved from this distress? Just listen, O servant of a petty master. Tell him to come here as he should. If he is suffering from lusty desires, he has only himself to blame, since he himself is the creator of Cupid's power. We self-respecting ladies are not going to yield to his demand that we go seek him out. So be it, then I will take my leave. No, 1 minute, dear swan. Ask him to come to us here, but without the goddess of fortune, who always cheats us by keeping him all to herself. Don't you know that goddess Lakshmi is devoted exclusively to the Lord? How could he give her up like that? And is she the only woman in the world who is completely sold out to him? What about us? So here we have two more statements by the queens expressing their separation from Krishna, even though technically he is not much separated from them. So the previously the address was to the oceans and the clouds, etc. And now we find the rivers, who are the wives of the ocean. They are addressed. So we know that in the summertime, when there's no rain, the rivers dry up. So this is similar to the queens. They are also dried up, and when the river dries up, the lotuses shrivel. So similarly, the gopis, because they don't get the affectionate glance of the Lord, their faces wither and their beauty disappears. And why? Because of separation from Krishna. Here they say they don't get his affectionate glance. So in this way, they take the rivers as being similar to themselves. The rivers are dried up, so from that the queens interpret that the rivers are like the queens themselves, who are also dried up, and they attribute the same reason, because Krishna's affectionate glance is not there. So in either case, it's the same reason. Yeah. So out of great emotion, they attribute feelings to the rivers. In the Nectar Devotion, that Rupa Goswami explains that actually real rasa takes place between equals, persons who have some higher intelligence. And they can discriminate, they can speak together nicely, they can use words and express their feelings. Okay? So this is where rasa manifests in a very nice way. And we see that often the rasa is increased by the conversations between Krishna and the gopis, for instance, or between Krishna and Rukmini. So by their exchange of words, we get a heightened type of rasa. So that takes some higher intelligence, some higher consciousness. People who are of lower intelligence cannot express themselves so well. So therefore the rasa is not so subtle anymore. And then what to speak of animals. So animals are very limited in what they can speak and with their words and their feelings, etc., much more elementary or primitive, simple. So therefore, rasa is expressed in a, let's say, limited way. And then if we get down to trees and things like that, obviously much, much less. And then if we get to inanimate object like clouds and rivers, then what can we say? There's no consciousness at all in one sense. So then how could they have rasa? This, of course, is material conception. But equally it applies in the spiritual world. Nothing is unconscious in the spiritual world, so we cannot say the rivers and the clouds have no consciousness there. But still, the rasa is not to the degree that we have in the human beings. So therefore, when we talk about rasa with Krishna, it's Krishna and gopis, or Krishna and cowherd boys, or Krishna and someone else. It is not animals or things like this. It is between human beings, and the center is Krishna. So we could say that, well, there must be rasa between the cows and Krishna, or between the plants and Krishna, and then ultimately even between the rivers and Krishna. Yes, in one sense, but it cannot be developed to the same degree because the exchange is not on the same level. They're very unequal. They're quite different. Therefore, we'll find even among human beings, the people are quite different. The rasa cannot take place. So therefore, conjugal rasa cannot take place between Krishna and the wives of the brahmanas because it is the wrong varna. They're brahmana women, and the Krishna's a vaishya, so it's improper, that type of relationship. So what to speak of different species of life, very difficult for rasa in the highest sense of the word to take place. So generally we say the rasa is between the human beings and Krishna in the spiritual world. And then even that is various degrees. But then we see that often, for instance, the gopis attribute the plants of having great prema, or the deer or the cows having great prema. Cows are crying for Krishna, or the deer, the female deer, are have their eyes wide open because of ecstasy for Krishna, etc. So it looks like rasa from the gopis' point of view, and they attribute that rasa to the animals and even to the plants, the creepers. They address the creepers or the trees similarly. And then here we see the queens of Dwarka are addressing the clouds and the rivers even. So, yes, in one sense there is some rasa, we can say, because they are spiritual entities, but it is not the same as the relationship between the human entities and Supreme Lord. That is what we really talk about rasa. So, therefore, these are not really called rasas, but projection of rasa upon the other species. So we call that an uparasa. It's not rasa in its highest sense. It's a secondary rasa or uparasa. Projected because of the rasa that is experienced by the human being. So therefore here the queens project rasa upon the rivers, and they say, oh, the rivers are also withered up because of separation from Krishna, etc. So they give them the same emotions that they have. So because of similarity, then the queens project various symptoms of love and separation upon various entities like the clouds crying as rain out of separation from Krishna, or the rivers, or the ocean roaring because of out of separation from Krishna. So
This is projection of rasa. So it's not the highest type of rasa. So ultimately, the queens of Dwarka are superior to these other entities. But then they are reminded of their own situation by seeing the clouds and the rivers and the ocean, various animals like the cuckoo, etc. So, and then the next verse, the swan. So this is a symptom of the great attraction that the queens of Dwarka have for Krishna, and therefore they project rasa everywhere. One of the symptoms of the Uttama Adhikari mentioned in the 11th canto, as opposed to the Madhyamas, who distinguish various living entities and they ignore and avoid the people who are atheistic and hostile, and they're friendly with the devotees and they worship the Lord, etc. So in contrast to that, the Uttama Adhikari sees everyone as a devotee of the Lord. Everything is a devotee of the Lord. So the verses quoted in relation to this are the gopis, how the gopis see the rivers and the lotuses and the trees as devotees in ecstasy. But they can equally apply to a person in the material world who has reached prema. Then you will also see everything as serving the Lord, everybody and everything. So even the demons are somehow servants of the Lord. What to speak of inanimate objects, etc. So this is the vision of the Uttama Adhikari. Everybody's a devotee. And consequently, the Uttama Adhikari sees other devotees as superior to himself. The trees are better devotees. The cows are better devotees. The deer are better devotees. Here the rivers are better devotees. So the Uttama Adhikari gives up preaching, because he doesn't have to preach to anybody. Everybody's always in the highest level of prema. So what is the necessity of preaching to anyone? So that is the vision of the Uttama Adhikari. He sees everything in terms of prema. So this we can see in the example here, how the queens are attributing everything, even the animals, to having great prema. So the next verse, the swan has great prema, etc. So similarly, we see in Vrindavan, in separation, that Radharani begins to speak to the bumblebee. And she has a conversation with the bee, thinking of the bee as a devotee of Krishna, etc. So in this way, the person who's very advanced projects rasa upon everything, and with Madhurya rasa and in separation, that we find extremes of this projection. So that we find an extended conversation between the queens and the swan taking place here in Vishnu Chakravarti's commentary. So this takes place because the queens are so absorbed in Krishna that they attribute the swan to speaking and having a conversation with them, in spite of the fact that generally swans cannot do this. Animals cannot talk in this way. Just as the bumblebee also cannot speak, but then Radharani is speaking to the bumblebee and criticizing Krishna, etc. So it's a projection of her rasa and her feelings of separation that cause this to happen. So anyway, the devotees who are on this high level project prema everywhere, and they see everything in terms of prema and relationship with Krishna. However, that may sometimes also be projected in, we can say, separation. So it is not only in a positive way, in a negative way. So in separation, we see that projection taking place. The rivers are also the great devotees, but they're also lamenting. But then in terms of the swan, they start accusing the swan as being favoring Krishna. And then they have a conversation with that swan. So Ultimately, as one develops in bhakti and reaches this state, then a transformation takes place in one's vision of everything, so that that person sees everything in terms of prema, and everything in relation to Supreme Lord in a positive way. Simultaneously, since they're beyond the material world, they don't have a conception of time and space. So past, present, future of this world have no significance for these devotees. They can enter into pastimes, there is no sense of time there at all. If they return to external consciousness, how long it takes, that is inconceivable. They're unaware of time itself because of these pastimes. So therefore, the experience in prema is quite different from our experience in the material world, and thus difficult for us to comprehend. So we cannot try to understand it with a logical mind. However, these descriptions are given in the Bhagavatam. We have here a description of the queens and separation and their ecstasies. We find in the previously with the inhabitants of Rajasthan, particularly the gopis, elaborate descriptions of their feelings in separation, etc., which are all manifestations of prema. So though, because we're in sadhana, we cannot really understand this type of experience, which is beyond the material world, still, the examples and descriptions are given to convey something of the nature of prema to us. And because we have devotion, a favorability towards the Lord and the devotees, then, to some degree, we can understand and appreciate these various pastimes and descriptions. So it's not completely beyond the devotees in sadhana, and therefore they're presented for people in sadhana. Of course, if a person in prema hears or reads the same descriptions, they obviously have a different experience. It is somewhat similar, but much deeper. Therefore, the descriptions are beneficial even for the devotees in sadhana, and therefore they are displayed in the Bhagavatam. On the other hand, those that have no devotion will not be able to appreciate or sympathize with these descriptions. And they will take them and analyze them in a material way. And thus, the real import of these pastimes is lost for such persons. So we say it is hidden from them. The real meaning is hidden from people who don't have a proper taste for the Bhagavatam. But for those who do have devotion and taste, the meanings are gradually revealed. So therefore, all of the descriptions given in the Bhagavatam are valuable for the devotees. They may be on a high level, but nevertheless, because of the potency of Bhagavatam, and the potency of the commentaries of our acharyas, to some degree, we can appreciate these. So this is an aspect of our sadhana. We have different divisions. We have general philosophical aspects, which are very necessary for us, which we call sambandha gyan. So that's presented also in the Bhagavatam. In fact, most of the earlier cantos are dedicated to explaining the supremacy of the Lord, how the jiva is the servant, and how material energy acts in relation to the jiva and in relation to the Supreme Lord. So we have many descriptions of this in third canto and fourth canto and fifth canto, for instance. And then we have the process of bhakti, also necessary for us to understand and distinguish pure bhakti from mixed bhakti. And the reason we distinguish pure bhakti from mixed bhakti is because pure bhakti leads to the prayojana, prema. If we do not do pure bhakti, we don't get to prema. So therefore, this sadhana of pure bhakti leads to the proper prayojana. Of course, you get some result from impure bhakti, but it's a different goal. So therefore, we do have to define the goal also. We cannot simply define the sadhana without the goal. Otherwise, it becomes useless. We cannot have a process without understanding what the goal is. In the material world, also the same principle applies. You can study in college, but you also need a goal. And those general goals are defined by the degrees you get, a law degree or an engineering degree or a physics degree or whatever, like that. And if you don't have any goal and you study, you don't go much anywhere. You don't accomplish too much. You get a little bit of everything, but not much of anything, ultimately. So you need some sort of goal. And that will define what type of courses you take. So unless we define and understand our goal, we cannot actually define our sadhana also. So the two are related to each other. So therefore, we cannot reject prayojana and simply say, I'll do bhakti and worry about prema later. Unless we know what that prema is, we can't do our bhakti properly. We'll do something else instead. Yeah? So, therefore, the prayojana prema is described in Bhagavatam, particularly in 10th canto, the prema in relation to Krishna. And we have all the descriptions of the various persons. And here we have the queens of Dwarka and their particular type of prema. And previously, we had the prema of Mother Yasoda and the prema of the gopis and the cowherd boys, etc. So, to some degree, we have to understand that in order to set a goal for ourselves in terms of our sadhana. So, in general terms, the sadhana to get that prema, which is pure, with no other desire than to please the Lord, the bhakti to do that is also called pure bhakti. So that is why at the very beginning of Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami gives this basic definition, Anya Abhilashita Shunya. So this defines not only Prem Bhakti, but Sadhana Bhakti as well. So in Sadhana Bhakti, we have to have that goal of Prema in mind when we're doing our Bhakti, and therefore we have to make attempts to have pure Bhakti in Sadhana itself. So, therefore, both things are necessary. Definitely we have to do the sadhana, but we also have to understand what the goal is also. So, the Bhagavatam is complete and it presents the goal, prema, in its various aspects in relation to Krishna. So we get all sorts of descriptions of all sorts of devotees in different relationships and different rasas with Krishna. And some of them quite detailed, as we see here with the queens of Dwarka and with the gopis of Vrindavan. So this helps us understand what that prayojana is, and therefore it will also help define our particular type of sadhana. So apart from pure bhakti, then of course within the sadhana itself, one can also cultivate a particular relationship in the goal. It could be dasya or sakya or vatsalya or madhurya. That's part of the goal again. So our sadhana will be determined by that particular goal we have in mind. So, therefore, we have these various descriptions in the Bhagavatam of the persons, the devotees involved in various rasas. So everything has its particular purpose in terms of sadhana as well. So we should never consider any of these descriptions to be too high or to be useless, because it's some idea. And those who are fortunate will develop a taste for a particular type of description of different persons. Here we have the queens of Dwarka, previously we have the inhabitants of Raja. So by hearing these pastimes, one develops a particular type of taste. So therefore, we get inspired for a certain type of goal in our sadhana. So that is the one of the purposes of these descriptions. Huh? What, the clouds? Well, it's never discussed by the Goswamis whether they're actually jivas there. Of course, everything is chit in the spiritual world. The houses are chit and the grass is chit, etc. But it's never discussed whether there's a jiva there with a certain rasas, because if it's a rasa, it's a very undeveloped rasa with the Lord. So it's never really discussed. There's a type of shanta rasa, which is very general. But that's also described in relation with people, rather than with the inanimate objects or animals, etc. Yeah? So you know, there's a few places where it says the animals have shanta rasa in one sense, but I've never seen that directly stated by Rupa Goswami anywhere. But he does say that some people have shanta rasa, some people who have practiced jnana previously or atmaramas, etc. So they develop shanta rasa for the Lord, and they go to the spiritual world, and they have this type of a very general bhakti like that. And small children have a type of shanta rasa also, because they haven't developed any particular type of loving relationship with Krishna, not even sakya. So it's a very general one. Other people have no particular rasa, a little bit of everything, because that's how they cultivated bhakti. Little taste for everything, so spiritual, a little taste for everything, nothing in particular. So that's another type of shanta rasa, shanta rati. Huh? But it's never discussed in relationship with plants or animals or rocks or anything like that, so hard to say. Yes, chit. We can say spiritual matter, conscious matter in the spiritual world. But I said whether there's a jiva there, personality, I don't know, it's not stated anywhere. That's the spiritual world. Everything is conscious. Sky is conscious, everything is conscious. Bhakti of the Lord.
Maharaj, we see wherever the devotees of the Lord are speaking to lower species with emotions, it happens when they are only in lamentation of separation. It never happens when they another time. Does it happen only when they are in separation with Krishna, or does it happen other time also?
Well, we do find pastimes where, for instance, they're talking to the parrots or something like this, and it's not exactly separation all the time. But there are occasions like that. It happens more often as separation because of their, let's say, their intense love, but then they start projecting that outwards onto other entities out of lamentation. In this case, we see that.
Second thing, Maharaj, you said one should have, like we all know prayojana, but we should know what is the ultimate, we should work towards that in a sadhana level. Like we know the prayojana, and then we should know, like most of the devotees who are in a sadhana stage knows that a prayojana is we have to ultimately have Krishna's love and prema bhakti for him. But nobody, we are neither trained nor we work towards that. So how do we do that?
How do we?
Nobody trains us towards that, or neither we work towards that. We just keep chanting Hare Krishna, Mahamantra, do little services, which doesn't lead us to the prema bhakti.
Well, that's why we have to hear properly, associate with devotees, etc. So it doesn't become simply a mechanical process. So in other words, we can do the process without understanding what it's for, etc. No, it has some value, just like chanting the holy name on it by accident also has some effect, but we don't get the ultimate effect from all of that. So by chanting accidentally, you can destroy your karmas, for instance. So of course, as devotees, we're not doing accidental bhakti, but still, the more knowledge we have and the more intention, proper intention to get the goal we have, the more powerful it becomes and the quicker the process becomes. So we can go slowly or we can go more quickly depending on our concentration.
Somewhere in the Ras Lila Pastimes Maharaj, it's mentioned that the Lord assumes the human form of human form and perform various pastimes in order for the humankind to get hear about him and get attracted to him. The word assumes is used there. But on the contrary, we see that's the ultimate form in the spiritual world.
Yeah.
How to understand that?
Yeah, well, sometimes you use the word grihita, etc., accepts the form, etc. And then our acharyas say that actually it's an eternal form. So that's only an expression we use to express the fact that the Lord appears within the material world, and it appears like he takes the form, just like Krishna is born, etc. But at the same time, we also understand that he's not born like a normal human being, and the that idea of looking like he is born is only a pastime. But his form actually is eternal. So therefore, the expression is used to show the appearance of the Lord in the material world, but our understanding is that it's not that a form is manufactured due to karma or anything like that. Actually, eternal form. And there's only an appearance of that for pastimes.
But again,
we can say, in other words, they translated the grihita or assuming a form. They say actually it simply means manifesting the form, that's all. Not that he produced the form or made the form. He's just manifesting it in the material world and it's eternal.
But we see in the context of Uttam Adhikari, he sees even the demons as, equal. But on the contrary, we find that he has to come down to the level of Madhyama, which means he's naturally on a Uttamadhika level, but he has to come down to the Madhyama, means he has to go through some difficulty to come down to that level, whereas his consciousness is at a higher level. Does he not go through a difficulty there?
He doesn't have to come down.
He can still be there in the Uttamadhikari and be on a preaching on a Madhyama level. Is that what it means?
Well, if he wants to preach, then he would have to do that, because we see persons like Narada Muni. They preach. It's in one sense, they have not degraded themselves, so they don't really come down to any other level. But they start making distinctions. In other words, in order to preach, we have to understand that people are fallen, they're not in prema. So in that sense. But it's not in any way a degradation of their status simply because they do that. But the general thing is that it would interfere with this idea that they see prema everywhere. In that sense, it's a step downward or whatever. So some devotees, most of them, prefer not to do that, and they simply absorb in prema, and then they end up in the spiritual world like that. And we do have cases where they preach, like Narada Muni as well. But then, it's not that they always do that. It's more of an exceptional case.
For instance, Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, he could see anything in connection with Krishna, which means, in my understanding, is at a higher level, but he's constantly preaching.
Yeah, well, as I said, Narada Muni also is doing the same thing. But it's not the common case. So when one reaches prema, then we get so absorbed in Krishna that he doesn't do anything else. So that's exemplified by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Puri. He did not preach much. He was simply absorbed in Krishna. Finish. And then he would see the sand dunes, he would think of Govardhan Hill, see the clouds, think of Krishna's color, enter into the pastimes. So that's the general conduct of the person in prema. Yeah, most of those Babaji's don't preach. They're absorbed in ecstasy. Objects in the spiritual world are said to be conscious entities. Well, they're conscious. Whether they're entities with a jiva, that's debatable. We don't know. What is their level of consciousness? Well, obviously much less than the jivas who have developed consciousness. Now, some jivas have less developed consciousness than maybe in Shantarasa. It's less developed than we have in Madhurya Rasa or Sakya Rasa, etc. But as for whether it's individual consciousness in plants and leaves and water, it's not really stated anywhere. It is said that some of the paraphernalia of the Lord appear as devotees. So these are special cases, of course, shaktis of the Lord or devotees of the Lord that appear in certain cases. Well, it's coming down in the sense in prema, one sees everything in terms of prema. Everybody has prema. So to preach, we say they don't have prema, therefore we're preaching to them to level up, so there's a distinction made. So therefore, the Prem Bhakti who sees everything in terms of prema is below that level in that sense. Not that he is lower or anything like that, but he starts making distinctions in order to preach.
Maharaj, when we speak of consciousness, there's always this sense of I. And for Jivatma, it is understandable that the I is identifying with oneself. But when we say that matter is conscious in spiritual world, where is that sense of I pointing towards?
Well, that's for saying Jiva.
For Jiva, we can understand that it's pointing towards us.
Yeah.
But conscious matter.
But whether we say that the water has a Jiva in it, it's not, as I said, it's not stated anywhere. So therefore, that sense of I may not be there with those particular conscious beings. And maybe the Lord's consciousness may be there, who knows? Shakti of the Lord somehow, Sandini Shakti of the Lord. So whether there's a Jiva there with an I, it doesn't matter. Maybe it's Krishna's consciousness there in a general way. Not stated directly. You know, so.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, like somewhere it is said, like we should have goal, like we should serve Krishna in any condition. We can be a bum in the stool, but we should serve devotees. And ultimate goal, like we should not desire any kind of liberation. Pure devotees isn't desire. He want to serve Krishna in any condition. Then there is another aspect, like as you were saying in the lecture, like we should have particular goal also. So how to understand these two contradictory? Like it appears.
Yeah, we don't have any desire for material benefits or liberation, which is also for the self, in terms of getting some enjoyment or whatever. So these will interfere with the development of bhakti. However, the definition says anya abhilasha. So there also, that means that there is some desire which is favorable. Other desires. So the desire to please Krishna, that's part of bhakti itself. So we desire to please Krishna, and it takes a specific form of a certain rasa, certain form of the Lord, etc. So that's included within the positive aspect of the definition itself.
You were saying that for one who doesn't have devotion, the meaning of the text is hidden. And as we practice devotion, the meaning reveals itself. Now, how do we understand that when we are reading a text, we are not speculating and actually it's a revelation and not a concoction? Because Vallabhacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said you're going against Sridhar Swami, but when our acharyas, sometimes they contradict each other, we accept it.
Yeah, well, speculation generally will take place in terms of areas where we give material, ideas, mix the description with material ideas or material logic. So to prevent that, we have the commentaries of the acharyas. Now, the acharyas may also have some disagreement over a particular meaning of something. But these are more detailed. So whether it's one thing or the other doesn't really interfere with the spiritual aspect of it. It may slightly alter the rasa. That's about all it does. So it's only in terms of such things, not in terms of material or spiritual or mixing rasa with material desires, etc. It's only in terms of some variation within rasa itself. Sometimes, like Jiva Goswami gives three different interpretations of a particular phrase. It could mean this, or this, or this, or this. Ultimately, it's not contradictory. It's just the nature of language as such. You could have any of those meanings out of it.
Maharaja, we say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had 3.5 intimate associates. What does intimate mean? When we say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had 3.5 intimate associates, what is the level of intimacy? Why would he say they're intimate?
Well, I suppose because with them he discussed the highest states of rasa, hearing and discussing rasa, and which he didn't do with other people.
Maharaj, after a jiva goes to the spiritual world also, can he perform sadhana to grow?
No, sadhana is for this world, not the spiritual world.
Okay.
There's no practice, that's the goal. They do the same activities, but they're not trying to achieve anything by that. It's an expression of their prema at that point, whatever they do.
Hare Krishna. So some books are there. So some devotees told they want to get it from Maharaj's hand. So it's Jaiva Dharma. Those who want can get it from Maharaj's hand. Gaurav Prabhu want it. We can appreciate by Hare Krishna mantra.
Hare.
Full set, full set. Then Ranga.